Hi, I'm Ben Richardson, and you're listening to the Karate Podcast, where we talk about karate, the competitive sport of Kumite, and the warrior's journey. Brought to you in association with Kumite Coach, the world's first progressive online high-definition coaching platform, created by coaches and fighters for coaches, fighters, and students of karate. Join KumiteCoach.com today and take your karate to the next level. All right, guys, welcome to another edition of the Karate Podcast. I'm really excited to have with me today AD Gray Sensei. AD Gray is a sixth dan in Shotokan Karate. In 2019, he was appointed as the head kata coach for the EKF National Squad. He's won multiple awards for his coaching over the years. And in 2021, he became a UK coaching ambassador. AD is also the proud owner of a fantastic dojo in Ripon. You've got to see this dojo to believe it. It looks absolutely brilliant. Check out AD's website. He's a sought-after coach in the UK, and it's a real pleasure to have him on the podcast today. So, AD, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks, Ben. Looking forward to it.
Thank you. So, AD, we're going to look back to where it all began for you and tell us a little bit about your journey into the martial arts and what brought you there.
Okay, well, I started in 1978. So I was like a seven-year-old, predominantly looking really for something to do with boxing or something along those sort of lines, and then stumbled across karate, really. My stepdad was come up with something to do, and I was like, okay, I'll do this. I'm gonna go to judo. And it was the times when Brian Jackson, Neil Adams, you know, all these sort of, you knew of judo, but you never knew of anything about karate. So it was just something so much smaller at the time. So obviously stumbled into karate then. So yeah, I was seven when I started, a long time ago.
Nice. And do you remember much about those early days? Did you stay with the same club for a long time, or was it?
Yeah, we were an SKI club, so Asano Sensei's group. So you generally had two at the time. You had the KGB, obviously, and SKI, which is Asano Sensei. And I stayed, yeah, virtually all my time. I did have one deviation to another club for about a matter of months, and went back to where I come from. But it was, yeah, no, it's hard. It was, you know, like anybody who talks about those times, it was hard training. Not maybe always the best instructional coaching type of training, but you know, I'm glad I had that background.
Yeah, absolutely. So you started with the SKI, so obviously a strong Japanese influence. And did you stay with them for a number of years? And were there any particular sensei, either UK based or Japanese based, that you know inspired you as you grew in your understanding of karate?
Early days was obviously just Sensei Aidan Trimble was sort of like, when I was younger, he'd become the first sort of world champion, so yeah, he was, yeah, unbelievable, and still is. And just, you know, it's just club instructors then. There wasn't so much of the traveling around, there wasn't so much of the getting to used to training with different coaches, and you know, it was very small and insular then, so really, you know, for training wise, for club wise. So you didn't get to see, there wasn't that much exposure, there was no social media to see anybody, and so it was really just within your club, within your group, that you would be looking for your role models, you know. So Sensei Richard Langdale was my coach for our club, but the club was owned by Paul McKay, I think it was. I can't remember what his name was. We never really see him. He didn't ever come to the dojo, but when he did, you just wanted to leave. Do you know what I mean? You're in trouble. Even as a kid, you know, to think nowadays of coaching, and to think that, you know, the kids were wanting to leave and thinking, how do I get out of this? Where can I find a window to get out? Because somebody said Paul's turned up, and you're like, oh no. So yeah, it was more club-based, you know, inspirations, and and getting a chance to train with Sensei Aidan Trimble as a younger kid was really good.
So as a karateka, what age did you get to your black belt?
So I was 14, so it took me 7 years. Wow. 7 years. Which again, I love. I love the fact that, you know, you see it around the UK, and I suppose right across the you know, Europe and all the rest of it, is so many people are fast tracked after school clubs. They're fast tracked into, you know, training for a year in their black belts. And I'm glad I took a long time to get there. But that was due to things like when you missed a grading, you know, because you were grading with Asano, Sensei, that if you missed a grading, that was it, you missed a grading. So if you were away on holiday or you're ill, you just had to wait till next time.
Yeah.
And then when we were doing downgradings, it was also waiting for enough of the club, you know, two or three of the club members were ready to go for their black belt in Nottingham.
Yeah.
So to get the mini buses up to there and to, you know, to do all that sort of stuff, which is so unheard of now because everyone, again, you can get around the country so easily, but you would wait till two or three of you were ready to go up. So there was a bit of time, whereas I was like a first queue waiting to grade and just waiting a long time and getting a little bit down about it. So I did try another club in the town where I come from, and trained there, and it was okay, but it just wasn't your home club, you know. So
yeah,
went back, and by the time I went back, I missed the grading again. So I'm like, oh my god, so if I'd stuck there, I'd have been graded earlier. But again, it makes no difference to me because, you know, your journey is your journey and you get there whenever you get there. So 14 yeah. So 14 I was downgrade.
So I'm interested, based on that, my own experience was quite similar to yours, growing up in the Northeast. Gradings, you know, happened, I think in my club it was like every 6 months or something like that. And if again, if you miss one, that was it, you just wait to the next one.
Yeah.
But having been a coach for a number of years and running my own academy, I certainly noticed, or I feel I've noticed in the last 15 years, there's been a shift from that, particularly younger people being able to wait, to more modern times where there's a definite need to, you know, grade quickly. How do you deal with that as a coach, to keep your students motivated and help them understand, like you said, that it's the journey's the important thing?
I think you start the way you mean to go on all the way through. So, you know, it is hard because you generally get some people come from, or kids come from an after school club, for example, predominantly the same guilty ones for this, where they give them new belts every time they go to a new half term because they come back next half term because they've got a new belt. But, you know, and I've had a conversation quite a few times with teaching and things like this, and we are a nation of, you know, easy, I don't know, we reward too easily, you know, so that you have badges for turning up, you have badges for, you know, you get an appraisal or a certificate or something because you woke up this morning, or you managed to make your own breakfast, so you get another badge. And it's just a false way of developing and learning, because, you know, your own personal journey is just, again, about how you improve. So, you know, I want kids to learn to, rather than getting a badge or award for a grading every 3 months or every 2 months or whatever they do, if you split that down to simple facts of, okay, why do they do a punch? Why do you want to make your punch better? Any punch or any technique, why do you want to make that better? Because you're going to get an award, or, you know, a certificate or a badge for it, or because you want to have a good or better punch for yourself? You know, I want, so it's about feeding them into understanding to, you know, do it for them and get a better technique or better kata, or just improve naturally and in your own time. But not for an award, apart from the award you give yourself.
Yeah.
So I was just challenging them. If you challenge people individually and independently for them, and not to be competitive to other people, you know, and again, it is a competitive world, but, you know, like all athletes should really do is compete against themselves. You know, that's sure. That should be their main objective. The better you do, the better the results you can get. So I think it's just generally to make people... Yeah, just focus on themselves. And it's common that people don't grade or they miss gradings. If they're not ready, they won't be allowed to grade. But it's just being honest with them so that they actually trust you, that you know what you're doing for the best of them, you know. So I could put you can put anybody in for grading, put everybody into grading, you can pass everybody, but they're not learning nothing from it. And at the end of the day, you're lying to them basically, because you put them into a grade they're not ready for, or you've passed them when they're not really good enough. So all I've done really, if I did that, was to lie to them. Honestly, if you've got an honest approach to people, and, you know, you're just training with the correct morals to develop themselves, and it takes as long as it takes because everybody's individual. You know, if I've got some kids who have started, I've got one little girl I can think of now, and she's a second Q. And then she started training exactly the same time as another young girl who's sixth Q.
Right.
But you just motivate them both because you put them, you channel them both to what they're doing as an individual. Yeah. And they're not there to look at each other, to compete against each other.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, that's a really strong message, you know, for life as well, because a lot of people do, particularly younger people now with the influence of social media, you know, there's a very much an external focus on life. And if you're developing kids with an internal focus, that's going to take them miles in their journey as humans.
But that's what it should be. You know, karate should be developing them as people as well, not just literally how good they can kick and how good they can punch. So they are serious life skills. If it's taught properly, at the same time, if it's not done properly, then it can work the other way, can't it?
Absolutely, yeah. So who were the main influences for you coming up in your karate career? If there's not too many to mention, the main ones that kind of led you on, because a lot of people get to black belt and they drop out, particularly as kids, particularly kids who get their black belt at 14, there's a lot of life to grow through there.
Yeah.
So what were the factors that kept you going, and who are the people that pulled you on from that point?
I think, again, maybe a lot of the groundings that you had, you know, allowed you to keep training rather than, I think it's very easy for a solely competition-minded person, once that competition's not there or you love the love of competition, then you're going to fall out of love of karate, aren't you? Because all they know is competition. But when you're training not just for competition, but just to improve yourself, then that boredom's never going to be there. You know, I still like doing the most basic of basic techniques because I still want to make them better. I didn't get into much competition. When I was younger, I did a few of the SKI national events, but we just really weren't focused on karate. So my biggest inspiration for me is Sensei Dave Hazard.
Yeah.
You know, by a long way. And, you know, I've trained over in Japan a few times, I loved the experience. I wouldn't say it was the most beneficial for my own karate development at all. But what I've learned from him, within the first, I don't know, 10, 15 years of training since Dave Hazard, I had learned more and developed my karate with better understanding than what I had done all the time before I'd even met him. You know, I think that was just completely overwhelmed with knowledge. I think Sensei Dave Hazard is one of the most important people to me. Sensei Aidan Trimble, again, trained quite a few times with him, loved him, great instructor. But really, again, I don't copy, I don't really look at other people too much. I worry about what I'm doing and the knowledge that I've got, rather than this modern society of copying, you know, and it's all, yeah, great, you can be inspired people, but you should be able to, I think individually you can do that yourself, you know, by achieving and seeing yourself improve. That can be enough to keep you hungry, to keep you want to come back for more. You know, you gain a little bit of knowledge, or you go to a course, or you train somewhere, you get a tiny bit of knowledge out of that that is enough to feed you for the next 6 months.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of it can be self-motivating. And I think it's either in you or isn't. You know, when you say, like you said, you get a lot of people who will maybe change or get to 14, and they maybe that's the club that isn't challenging them enough. You know, again, you go back to other clubs and they, you know, they're 14 and then they're on a pathway to be instructors, and they're 16 and they're making up all these titles just to keep them at their club.
Yeah.
But none of my students have that, and they've all been with me, all my downgrades have been with me from day one. And they're never fast-tracked or pushed into coach. And some people can't coach. So why would I make them a coach? Why would I make them interested instructors? So some people have to try and motivate people to keep them coming by offering something new. But you should be able to challenge them karate with knowledge, you know, and being open-minded to try this and try that and experimenting with different ideas. That will keep people motivated and keep people interested. And then they won't need to lose interest, you know. But I think you buy people, and they'll just fall away eventually, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So, with your journey then, at what point did you start to coach, and then how did that coaching career start to progress for you?
I went in the army at 16. Right. So I joined the army at 16, went to the junior army, and I did a little bit there. When I was in junior training was for a year. So I did a little bit whilst we had sort of PT sessions, or if we had any free time, which was pretty rarely, but if we did a free time, then I was allowed to go and do some training. And then there's always other people you come across everywhere you go that have done karate before. So it's quite easy to start, you know, working together, doing a little bit of karate together whilst we were doing our training. And then when I went to Germany, I was in Germany at 17. So I stopped for a little while because obviously you're training, and I was doing other sports at that time as well. And then when I went out to Germany at 17, I sort of picked it up again, and they wanted a karate club. And, you know, we started doing a karate club there, and that's where I first started teaching. So I was around about 17, 18, well, probably about 18, 19. Right. But it wasn't teaching as in, you know, setting your own club. It was just doing a little bit of things with people who got things in common, and doing a little bit of training like that. And then it developed from there, really. Did other sports, and then when I moved to Ripon, so about 26 years ago, that's when I really started getting into coaching, and that's when I set up a first club then. Just maybe about that. So yeah, probably about 26, 28 years ago, I started to get into it, and I found out I was actually better at coaching than what I was competing.
Yeah.
You know, which is karate, that was, you know, and I think that is another point as well, because, you know, just because people are good athletes or good individuals doesn't mean they're going to be a good coach.
Absolutely.
You know, and there's a lot of people with big titles, and all of a sudden with that, they think they're a good coach, you know, or you see a lot of people going to train with somebody because they won an under-21 European Championships once. So they think they're a great coach. Like, I don't really understand that concept, because, you know, I'd be looking for the coach who coached that person.
Yes.
That's who I'd want to be training with, the coach who's coached that person to win. Rather than the athlete who's won it. I started when I was about 26, 27 years ago. And then started with a small club in Ripon, you know, dragged family members across to make numbers up. And then it just multiplied and built up more interest in what we were doing. And then I opened a couple more clubs. And before I knew it, I was, you know, finishing work and just killing myself with working during the week and then teaching on the evening. Yeah. And then eventually we swapped over and then, yeah, made that break and did it full time.
How long ago was that you went full time?
Yeah, probably about 20 years ago.
Nice.
Yeah, about 18, 20 years ago now. So, yeah.
And have there been any major points in that last 20 years that you've, like, drastically altered how you coach, or you've realize something or learn something that's taking a different route?
Yeah, again, I don't try and, well, I don't consciously, and I don't actually do it. I don't look at too many roads, you know. There is so many different ways that you can go. You know, you can go to this instructor who does it this way. And in the end, a lot of people follow all these different paths, but aren't really, you know, you need one path to travel down. So again, essentially Dave Hazard's karate was my path that I chose to go. This is what I believe in. This is my roots, what I want to do. And just followed that one path, really. Obviously, I'd go and train with anybody else, Sensei Tiki Donovan, Sensei Wayne Otto, or anybody. I would train. But I think I'm sort of intelligent enough to take out the bits that I want to take out.
Yeah.
So I'm quite open, very open-minded to try anything, but also know the path that I'm sort of trying true to the path that I want to take.
Yeah. Awesome. And so we talked a little bit about this before the podcast started, about the traditional aspect of karate and defining that. So would you mind just resharing that with the listeners? Because I asked you, are you a traditional club?
Yeah.
That was the question.
It's just a very gray area for me, that the traditional or sport club. People brand themselves one or the other, but, you know, what is it? traditional ideas and traditional, you know, morals and discipline and respect, all 100%, you know, they're good, but there's stuff in the sort of like traditional side, older style or older ways that I think is so bad. At the same time, there's some stuff in the older ways of learning that are so good. So I think for me, you're not, I'm not a traditional club. I'm just a karate club with, you know, some foundations of tradition, but look for a modern way of making it better. So it's a bit of a combination, really. But I'm not really, you know, I can remember somebody doing the last move of Gion not long ago, a couple of years ago, with the extended long kiai, and he still did it that way. And I'm like, why are you doing that? And he's like, because that's the way I was taught. And I'm going, yeah, but you don't, you know, I don't watch a black and white TV now. You know, I don't, you know, go to work on a horse and cart. Do you know what I mean? It's got, at what point do you say, well, that's true. Well, you know, everything's got to be evolving and everything's got to change from day to day. And that's healthy and that's good. Mm. But keeping it to one way because you were taught that one method or that one understanding of that move from 20, 30 years ago. You know, same again, you look at football, you don't play football like, it's like I ask, some people say the question, don't they, where would the 1966 team beat the current England team? And they, would they heck? Not a chance, would they? You know, but put them in their current times relative to each other, then it's different. But of course it's not. And and you'd hope not, because if you look back and you think you were doing things better 10 years ago than what you're doing now, then you've gone backwards. Or even if you're doing things the same, then you've stayed still, which is might as well go backwards. So yeah, traditionally, I don't know. I don't class it as traditional karate. I'd more correct karate. I try and look at it as a, you know, a good understanding of the fundamentals. We do everything in a traditional way. So Kion Kata Kumite, the structure and the foundation in a traditional way, but the way we do it can be modernized.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know, was that the same sort of thing I was saying earlier?
That was the same. Yeah, that was. Yeah, no, absolutely. So as a, and you also mentioned that you're not a competition focused club, but you also obviously got appointed in 2019 to be the head coach. So tell us a little bit about that journey.
Like karate traditionally, if you go back to the old days of karate again, where you've got the Kion Kata Kumite and a competition was sort of like on a sub level. But I think it's very easy to coach from traditional or not traditional, but dojo karate. Karate, if you do karate correctly and move correctly and you work on your technique, one, your application will work, and two, it should be moving in a more efficient and correct way.
Yeah.
And if you come from that sort of understanding from dojo karate, you can adapt to competition easily because your fundamental body mechanics are working correctly.
Yes.
But the people who sometimes come from a sport background and only do competition wouldn't really be able to adapt to a dojo way or even making it an application way or making it a way that karate is invented for and as a self-defense and as it, for it to work. So, yeah, just because I have those correct foundations, what I believe correct foundations from again, one of the most best technical trainers is essentially Dave Hazard, and working with him so much, it allows you to be able to, you know, work in competition quite easily. Same, no different to a lot of the skills in coaching across, you know, you can cross level them over different sports.
Yeah.
You know, a coach is a coach first and foremost, a coach is a coach. And then what you coach is specialized. So, you know, so I think it's, if you can coach in the dojo well, then you can coach a squad well in a competition. And it's only being open-minded again and understanding and playing the game to what you're trying to achieve, isn't it? You know, I don't want the competition kids or any of the competition athletes to start thinking that it must work outside, because it's a completely separate field really now like that. So, you know, I understand that for competition fighters or for competition kata people, they have to impress referees to get points. So if I went in there with a mindset, say, no, but that's wrong. That's not how it's done. That's not how I do it in my dojo. Then I'm counterproductive to what I'm trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. So as long as you're clear in what you're trying to achieve. So for example, you know, I could see a kata that is a competition kata that wouldn't pass a downgrade.
Yeah.
It wouldn't pass a downgrade in my dojo. However, my sort of first cues who were attempting their downgrading would do rubbish in a competition.
Yeah.
you know, because you've got to understand what you're trying to achieve, whether it's a competition, it's for points, or whether it's for a dojo to do the kata correctly with fundamentals that would work and support them, and also be able to move. Because a lot of athletes, you see how they move, you're not going, oh, I don't like the way you move. Now, maybe, again, we go back down the lines where people are becoming 50, 60 years old and are starting to struggle mechanically. You know, their body is starting to give way through bad practice.
Yeah.
And one of the most important things is that longevity, isn't it? So, you know, if you move correctly, that you do in a dojo, then you can have a long career and you can always do karate forever. You know, you don't need to stop because your body's given up on you. And sometimes when people cheat in the competition circuit, it's just to get a medal now. So they will do anything to their body in a negative way with no long-term understanding of how it's going to affect them. But it gives them a gold medal in the Central England Championship. They've done what they need to do. It's like, and I tend to look on a bigger picture.
Yeah.
So it's a longer-term project for athletes rather than just getting a medal now. So if they mechanically move correctly, like you would do in your dojo, then they will develop. We've got one now, Nat Hearn. He won the Commonwealth Senior Championships, and he just got out to the Worlds in Konya, and he's lightning fast. He's so fast, and you watch him, but he never finished the technique. Didn't mechanically move that well. It wasn't that efficient. He was just lightning fast, you know. And at the time, he just relied on that to get him, you know, to do well in competition. But it wasn't, his aims weren't high enough at that, what level of competition we want to try and achieve.
Mm.
And now it just clicked into place. Sorry. And it's just clicked into place. And now his technique's starting to catch up as well. So now he's got an all-round brilliant speed, execution of kata is brilliant, and he finishes his technique, and he can hit a bag harder than anybody else I've seen hit a bag.
Great stuff.
So you know, that's from correct body mechanics.
Yeah.
And it is funny, because when I've had the squad here, sometimes we get them to hit bags, and honestly, it's quite scary to see the bags are battering the athletes, you know. and the thing is, you know, a kata has to be believable. And if they can't hit a bag, then I can't believe their technique.
Yeah.
Or that punch or that kick, it just wouldn't work. But you can understand that by body mechanics. I don't have to see and put a bag in front of them and test them whether they can hit a bag or not. You know, their body mechanics and their body alignment will tell me whether they can hit a bag and hit through a bag.
Yeah.
I think it's quite easy to adapt as a coach.
Mm. And did you find any difficulty in taking on a squad that was made of all styles karate? Because obviously Shotokan has a different focus from Shitoiru and, you know, so forth.
But when I first applied and did the presentation, the first thing, one of the most important things was to have style-specific coaching.
Right.
You know, because again, sport is sport. So you can coach other styles, because karate across the styles isn't that different, is it? The result of what we're trying to achieve is the same. In a fight, in arts of any kind, it isn't that too far, shouldn't be that far from each other. Mm-hmm. So crossing a style in karate isn't that hard, but the finesse and the timing and the understanding of the different style, I don't know. And I wouldn't make out, I know. I would never even try. I try and work it out and understand it. But mechanically, and their body movement and their transitions and their finishing of technique and their kime, you know, and their attitude and their storytelling is cross styles. I don't need to be any style to be able to understand that in a kata. But it was important to bring in style-specific coaches to help with that side of it.
Sure. And what have been some of the biggest challenges you faced throughout your coaching career? Is there any that stand out?
I've been lucky really, because I've had the grassroots, which I love. You know, that's what I love. I love that day-to-day club training. And then we've had the once a month getting together for the England training. That's been hardest, because when you go into, you know, a different squad as such, the question is, what can you do to me? That the athletes are now questioning you.
Yeah.
You know, you have to, in a way, you have to prove yourself to the athletes to say that actually I've got something that's going to improve you or help you. Or, you know, whereas maybe the old style instructors would come in and just demand respect. But, sure. we're 2022 now and you have to earn that respect. So I think the hardest thing I had coaching wise was coming to the squad, which weren't mine. I hadn't built up, I had no relationship with because I don't know them.
Yeah.
It took quite a while to get that round to actually go, actually, they know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And the same as, you know, when you're in a club atmosphere, those kids come in from day one trusting you, you know, and then and you trust them and you build a relationship up. But when you, and that's probably the most important thing about coaching is relationships.
Sure.
And when you go to a national squad and you see them once a month, you've got no relationship. So how do you coach, you know, the hardest thing then is to have be able to coach somebody without a relationship with them.
Yeah.
So the hardest challenge as a coach was going to the England squad and then, being able to build relationships and trust with them.
And was that just a person-to-person process or did you have an overall strategy for that?
Yeah. There's loads of strategy what we had to try and do because it was in quite a bad place, really. So we had the whole, you know, we had to have a clear structure of how we're going to turn cat around in this country. And one of those things with the style-specific coaching was there's so many people crossover styles, you know, yeah. and you know, that doesn't get found out in this country because of the level of refereeing, but mm-hmm. you go to a European and Worlds and it will get found out, you know, they know that's a Shatora person doing a Shotokan kata or vice versa.
Yeah.
And over here, the knowledge is less, I think. The reason why, I mean, we're not a Shatora style country, are we? I mean, we're Shotokan Wadaru predominantly. Yeah. But you know, probably we're looking at probably about 70% of the squad of Shitori. And at those 70%, I would probably add roughly about 40 to 50% come from Shotokan or Wadaru. You know, that's right. Their foundation. Then they'd start adapting to Shitori.
Do you think that's because of the length of katas? That's what I hear a lot of competitions.
No. the true reason I believe is if you look at the whole refereeing structure and the history of England, so we are predominantly Shotokan Wadaru. Mm-hmm. So if I'm a Shotokan referee and I'm watching a Shotokan kata, and anybody who does that style will, I could pick 10 faults up. Then somebody showed me Shitora kata, and I'm not going, oh, actually, I don't know this kata correctly. I'm not sure. I think I can probably pick about 3 things up. So then when I've got a flag in my hand, you know, before the point system, it was a red or blue, it goes against Shotokan every time.
Yeah.
Just because a referee is Shotokan or a Wadaru person would probably understand Shotokan more. I think that was a way. So then in this country, what you got then is the coaches in this country or some of the club coaches started going, okay, well, Shitora is winning in this country. And if Shitora wins in this country, then we need to do that. And again, that's a short term. That's a short term. That's for a medal now.
Yeah.
And again, when I work with England stuff, I'm not looking at medals in this country. I'm looking at medals. What's working abroad and what's happening abroad. So I think the reason why there's so much Shitora is just simply because people use it as a little bit of a loophole to get medals in this country. Right. And that, you know, that's not disrespecting referees. It's just human. I mean, if they agree, a lot maybe not agree with it, but if they're honest with themselves, you can pick more faults up watching your style kata than what you can somebody else's style.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's the reason why we've gone Shitora mad in this country. It's because it won. It's going to win over here. I don't think it is the length of the kata. I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's anything that. I think it's literally clubbed a cottoned onto this and thought, I need to YouTube a bit of Shitora kata. Mm. Bearing in mind, there's not that many Shitora. There's not that much depth of Shitora in this country.
Yeah.
So they've learned it from somewhere and they've generally learned it from YouTube or, like I said, going back to finding out, you know, making contact with an under 21 European champion saying, oh, can you teach my kid that kata? But not having any correct fundamentals for that kata.
Yes. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. I think that's the real reason why it's a story. It just scores better in this country because. But the lack of knowledge, and that would include me in other styles, in refereeing other styles. If I saw a Wadaru style, it would probably be, you know, a Wadaru kata, it'd probably be a Shotokan kata that I was watching because I'd be able to pick faults up on a lot more faults on the short cam. Maybe not so much nowadays because I understand the styles a bit more, and I would be able to pick up fundamental faults, transitional faults, and movement faults. But I wouldn't be able to pick up the kata being done 100% correctly. And if I'm honest, I can tell you we've missed out a move out in Shitoru.
Yeah.
Mind you, I haven't got a week to watch Super Emperor, you know what I mean?
So tell us a bit more about your coaching and your award in 2021 as a coaching ambassador for the UK.
Yeah, so I've won a couple of awards. So in 2017, I was nominated as a finalist for the Children's Sports Coach of the Year for UK coaching. And then I made it to the final. And then on the following year, I got in the final again. And that was down in London. And I won it that year. So 2018, I won the UK coaching, Children's Sports Coach of the Year.
Fantastic.
And then, yeah, and then it all come about. And then I've done a few more things with UK coaching. So we've done quite a bit of video filming. We just did a big thing in April this year. It hasn't all been released yet, but it's all about coaching. It's not specific karate, but I've done quite a bit of work with UK coaching, with filming, with coaching. I did a new one with Sport England, doing a new, it's all about children's coaching. So I've just done a big article for that, and that's UK coaching, but that's funded by Sport England. So that's quite good. And then just got asked if I'd be one of the UK coaching ambassadors for UK coaching. So fantastic. Yeah, I did that from last year. Well, what are we know, last year it was, yeah.
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 And so as a coach, and obviously someone who's successful at coaching, are there any particular things you'd like to see introduced into karate coaching generally, any structures or any formats to help not the sport, but just the art itself improve?
I think again, it takes, you know, separate what you're coaching. Yeah. You know, so what we need to do, and this is, you know, it's a karate problem again, but we need courses and we need structures and we need coaching development programs within England. Yeah. Now, I don't know any group out there that provides that, but to make better karate people, and I always say for me, England squad, you know, I can do what I can do as much to the best of my ability. Apart from that, I need better ingredients, you know. So if the clubs were to provide me with better ingredients, I'd be able to do more.
Hmm.
And to improve the ingredients, improve the coaching.
Yeah.
And that's not then going down the old school, what people always criticize other people. Oh, I don't do like that. I do like this. That's irrelevant. Let's forget about how you specifically do that move in that kata, this move in this. We can all learn from each other how to do that. But what we can do and what doesn't get happened in karate is there is an improvement in coaching and understand how to be a coach. Because I wouldn't call myself a karate instructor. I'd call myself a karate coach.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing that we can do in this country for karate would be to improve the coaching standards. But you come across the ego, you know. And I can remember talking to a senior coach I knew or I know, and I was talking to him about this, and he was like, "What?" He said, "I wouldn't come on some coach's course. I've been coaching it for 30 years, 40 years, or whatever. I ain't going to come and get taught how to coach from somebody." And I'm going, "Well, you know, what can you do with that?" That's the answer there. And then, so whether it's, you know, working in UK coaching, it's quite good because you get to talk to lots of other coaches, you know, GB coaches and all sorts of different levels of coaching. And the amount of stuff you learn just by talking to them.
Yes.
You know, again, the biggest thing I would learn from UK coaching is relationships, building a better relationship with anybody you're coaching. You get to understand somebody better. And we did this before the Commonwealth Championship. So we had a 3-day training camp in Ripon. So they stayed 2 nights. We trained 3 days with them. It was karate, you know, we did yoga, we did swimming, but we had so much time together as a small group, 17 athletes, 3 coaches, or 4 coaches, including yoga and a physio with us, that with the bonds that were built just on that. And that's as much development that's happened in the last God knows how many years in English karate especially in the EKF, is that we work together in a close-knit group and get to know each other. And yeah. I can remember one of the coaches I was talking to, GB coaching, and you know, he would go to one of his athletes christening. And I was like going, what? He said, oh, yeah, I'm off to his christening. And I was a little bit at a time, sort of a little bit old school, like you separate yourself. You know, there's a line and that's it. Mm. Instructor, you know, very Japanese-y again, you know, you end of class, bye-bye, see you later. I've done, you know. And I think I was like that myself. And then UK coaching, I was sort of working with some people and just being able to listen to people going, actually, you know, relationships are more important. So that means you have to spend a little bit more time with somebody to get to understand them. And maybe outside of the dojo. So, you know, we did water polo, we did yoga, we did all sorts of different things, socializing on nighttime, you know, staying in the accommodation, getting to know each other, going out for something to eat together was much as coaching as what you did in the dojo, yeah. Or if not, maybe more. So, yeah, definitely people need to open their eyes to coaching, and the governing bodies need to get onto this. And I think it's crazy this day in 2022 that there is no coaching qualifications or no coaching programs within karate.
Yeah.
So that's the biggest thing. If you could change, make people better coaches, make them understand coaching, not karate. I'm not going to teach you how to do karate. You choose your path, I'll choose my path, but we can all be better coaches.
Absolutely. 100% agree. AD, have you got any personal goals for the upcoming future that you're really focused towards right now?
Just keep developing. You know, keep developing my own karate, keep developing how I'm coaching and the results that we're getting. Again, keep producing good people, regardless of medals or not medals or passing grades or not passing gradings, creating good people. And just try and keep developing karate like you as a person, individual, develop as a person. So, you know, your personality changes. You know, and I don't do things that I did 5 years ago or when I was 20, thank God. When you look at things like that, then I want my karate to develop like your personality develops as well. So there's got to be a lot of personality in karate. It's just keep doing the little things, just taking care of the little things. And I don't aim too high or look too far in the future. I definitely had unfinished business with the England squad. We had made massive progress and development to where we were. You know, when I think the England squad, just the methods that we were using and the sort of structure way we were going to try and attack international competitions again. And since last December, you know, winning something like 37 international medals across Europe, you know, from the squad, you know, all the English championship categories were won by people from the EKF squad. The British championships were all run by people from the EKF squad. And virtually all the medals, a lot of the medals at the Commonwealth Championships were from our squad. So I think we've laid a foundation for major, you know, fundamentals to go further and to take karate or kata to where it's not really been for a long time. It's just a shame that the politics, you know, do get involved with that and sort of stifle your development with them. But, you know, we looked at educating the athletes. We didn't just coach them. Again, like I said, when we were doing our training sessions, it wasn't just in the dojo. It was outside of the dojo that you do a lot of your work. You know, and the national squad had monthly training programs as in, you know, anti-doping, making them understand how to be a more professional athlete than what karate athletes are. They're athletes in the terms of karate, but they're not athletes in the terms of, you know, Sport England athletes. But they can be, you know, we're with little money, but just nutrition. You know, we had specialists in nutrition coming in to teach. There's so many things we could have done and so many things we were going to go and do. So I've got a load of things that I want to do personally and for the club and just develop naturally. But at the same time, I just do wish I had a better opportunity or a better board to be able to do something more with the England squad.
Yeah, it's a real shame. It sounds like you've got some incredible ideas and, you know, athletes would clearly benefit from it. So hopefully we'll see you back in, you know, that realm at some point in the future. But thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I've really enjoyed talking to you and getting to know you, and I appreciate your time.
Yeah, cheers. Thanks very much, Ben. It was good. Enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Cheers.